Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we're going to talk now about race and IQ. No, it's not the 1930s. No, Charles Murray's book, The Bell Curve, didn't just come out. So why are we having this conversation? Didn't we leave all that behind years ago? Well, apparently not everybody has. You have no doubt heard of the comments of Nobel laureate James Watson, who recently said that he was, quote, inherently gloomy about the prospects for Africa because all our social policies are based on the fact that their intelligence is the same as ours, whereas all the testing says not really, unquote, from James Watson. And, of course, there are the infamous comments of former Harvard President Lawrence Summers, who said that perhaps women do not have the same innate ability as men in some fields, namely math and science. So it's hard to lump learned people like that in the same category as Jimmy the Greek, but what is the story with race and IQ? We'll talk now about why this is again in the public eye. With us is Eric Turkheimer, a professor of psychology at the University of Virginia. We have linked on our webpage to his article, The Theory of Innate Differences, which appeared in the November Cato Unbound. Also with us is Malcolm Gladwell. We do have Malcolm Gladwell, right?
Yes.
Malcolm Gladwell, his article, None of the Above, What IQ Doesn't Tell You About Race, which appears in this week's New Yorker. And thanks a lot for coming back on WNYC. Malcolm, how are you?
I'm very well.
And Eric Turkheimer, thank you very much for coming on with us.
Thank you.
And we keep hearing, Professor Turkheimer, and I'll start with you, that scientists have found genes for seemingly some of the most random of behaviors, like a gene for adventurous behavior or a gene for shyness, when so much of what we hear about behavior in medicine now appear to be genetic. Why couldn't intelligence be innate?
Well, I mean, first of all, what we hear over and over again is not so much that there is a gene for adventurousness or shyness, though sometimes you do hear that sort of thing, but more that there's something genetic about them. I mean, that's what gets established over and over again, that mm-hmm. identical twins are more similar for that kind of thing than fraternal twins are. And what's actually proved very difficult is to go from that knowledge that there's something genetic going on in practically everything, I would say, to finding any specific gene for anything, which by and large hasn't worked out. There are genes that have little tiny associations with one thing or another, but nothing that would make you want to call it a gene for shyness, really.
So this whole idea that, and we had a guest on recently talking about how she got this genetic profile of herself done by this firm in California that
about
has started
her ancestry and
about
all
her
that
ancestry,
stuff.
And she, you know, discovered that she's 23% more likely than other people to have macular degeneration as she gets older, and 16% more likely to, you know, be protected against heart disease and all this stuff. You say not really.
Well, I mean, the closer you get to actual medicine and physical characteristics, the better that kind of stuff works, though even those kinds of things have turned out to be far more difficult than anybody anticipated.
So what we call intelligence and IQ don't neatly fall into that category.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, intelligence and IQ are very much in the category that I were describing. There are beyond any doubt, very general genetic pathways between parents and children that are relevant to intelligence test scores. I don't think there's any serious question about that. But it hasn't turned out that there are identifiable genes related to IQ that have more than very, very small effects.
So Malcolm Gladwell, on this question of what a gene for intelligence would even measure, you write in your New Yorker piece this week that IQ, you talk about something called the Flynn effect, a researcher named Flynn from New Zealand, and he writes that IQ measures not so much how smart we are as how modern we are. Talk about that.
Well, Flynn's argument is that what's being picked up in an IQ test is a kind of way of looking at the world, an ability to sort of sort your experience into categories and think abstractly. And that explains, the Flynn effect is this term that explains this fact that for as long as we've been measuring IQ, from one generation to the next, IQs rise. And they rise not by a small amount, they seem to rise by a large amount. Your IQ is higher as a general rule than your grandparents, and their IQ was higher than their grandparents. And that's a sort of very puzzling and important fact about IQ, and it says how deeply IQ is kind of grounded in the world we live in, the experiences we have, the way in which we're taught. And so it suggests there's something very powerfully environmental going on in the kinds of scores we get on these paper and pencil tests.
Now, I guess it was your line, I want to give you credit where credit is due, that IQ measures not so much how smart we are as how modern we are. But it was Flynn who observed that in a 30-year period from 1952 to 1982, the average IQ of an 18-year-old in Holland went up 30 points.
21 points.
21 yeah. points. Yeah. It's still a lot.
Yeah, I just think I've made a very kind of modest contribution to this debate in my New Yorker piece, but I just sort of think if you think about Flynn and you take what he's, and no one disputes his observations, the Flynn effect is kind of has passed from theory to fact now. We all accept that IQs seem to be going up generation to generation. I think if you take that fact seriously, it ought to undermine the kind of fundamentalist approach to IQ that so many of these like James Watson and others seem to have. It means that you have to kind of put an IQ score and also differences between groups on IQs, on IQ tests, in perspective. Say, look, this is a number that rises and falls, and or largely rises, but you know, in the space of a generation, by an enormous amount. We can't get carried away by claiming that there are innate differences between races if you take that fact seriously.
And we can take some phone calls on this. Again, our phone number for today, as we do work on our usual system, 212-227-7606, 212-227-7606, with people talking again, for better or worse, about race and IQ, including Malcolm Gladwell's article in this week's New Yorker. He's with us along with Eric Turkheimer, who is a professor of psychology now. William Salatan, Professor Turkheimer, yeah. The national correspondent for Slate.com, came to James Watson's defense. He writes about the IQ difference between blacks and whites and writes that, quote, there is strong preliminary evidence that part of it is genetic, unquote. He brings up physiological factors like head size and brain weight. And he cautions people who are squeamish about what he calls biological evidence that nausea doesn't make the studies go away. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think those kinds of studies put scientists, Southan is, I guess, a journalist, in, I know it puts me in a very difficult position because I fundamentally don't think that question of whether racial differences in intelligence are innate is really a scientific question. I don't think there's any decisive evidence that could ever be found that would convince anybody in either direction. And so I'm therefore very skeptical of why it's worthwhile for anybody to be conducting these studies. But on the other hand, there's always a good kind of pressure on us as scientists to take seriously the data that somebody's collecting. And so I think people are always tempted to say, well, I'm a scientist and people are collecting these data and I owe it to the data and to the science to see what the data say before I reach a conclusion. But the problem is that as soon as you do that, as soon as you concede that there's a scientific question out there that we're waiting for the answer to, you're saying, well, the jury's still out. You know, maybe it's going to turn out that they're right and black people do have innately lower IQs. And so since I don't really think that can possibly be the outcome of this discussion on theoretical grounds, I simply won't go there. I won't concede that it's a scientific question that we're waiting for the answer. Because people have been making claims like this for
at the very least, probably forever, but for the very least on the record for 100 years, that back in the 20s, when there was a big discussion about immigration, everybody was having very sober discussions about whether Italians and Greeks and Jews had innately lower IQs.
Right.
And what's happened in the interim is not that people have done new scientific studies to show that Italians aren't innately inferior. The question has just gone away as people's racism about Italians has evaporated as they've become assimilated into the culture.
Let's take a phone call. Keith in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Keith.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Okay.
I just wanted to say that, yeah, what he said, you've been hearing these arguments for over 100 years, and in other words, instead of looking at the results of the study, why don't you look at the people who are doing these studies? You'll be some, you know, white guy who has an axe to grind about, you know, other peoples who are lower than them. I don't know if it makes them feel better, but he is absolutely right. They thought that Italians had what, small heads, and the Jews looked like monkeys, and they all of all this other stuff going on. So with every immigrant group that has come, you know, into this country, it's always some white guy who would like mm-hmm. do these. You know,
right. Well, it's an interesting.
So where is this coming from?
It's an interesting question.
Look at the person who's doing these studies.
Okay, thank you very much. And Malcolm Gladwell, let's take that question head on. Who actually devotes their time to trying to establish that as a matter of group reality, the genetic intelligence of black people is less than others?
Well, there are people. I mean, I think it's people who get carried away by the apparent certainty of the kind of numbers you get from IQ tests. I mean, you can give these tests to groups of people, and you can see differences. And the question is, how do you choose to interpret those differences? And there are some people, when they see a number, they think it must reflect some deep underlying innate difference. And they make that assumption about people. They see if one person scores 120 and one person scores 110, they think the person who's 120 is better than the 110 person. And they simply extrapolate from that to groups as well. And they don't want to sort of concede that what you are measuring is something that's highly changeable and that's highly susceptible to all kinds of different contexts. I mean, I think I would. So I sort of, there just seems to be a kind of mindset that's very attracted to reducing very complex phenomenon to simple numbers.
Stan in Billington, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hello, Stan.
Hi. A couple of quick comments. One is that, as far as I can understand and ascertain, we don't know we don't have a scientific definition of race. Our DNA, the DNA between a black person, an individual black person and an individual white person, may overlap a lot more than two individual blacks or two individual whites.
Right. So not only can't we really measure intelligence through genes, we can't even measure race through genes, you're saying. But Professor Turkheimer, in 2005, the FDA approved a heart medication called Bidil, which is a drug indicated for congestive heart failure, apparently, in black patients. And it was the first ethnic medicine, so-called, approved by the FDA. And, of course, it generated no small amount of controversy because the FDA seemed to be implying that there is some fundamental physiological difference between black Americans and others as a group. So have you looked at the Bidil? And if that's legitimate, then how do you keep from at least
question? And there are differences, average differences in gene frequencies between, I mean, what we call in the United States black people and white people. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, they're not huge differences, and the caller's right that the differences within groups are larger than the differences between groups, but the differences between groups are still there. And, you know, when it comes to things like heart disease medication, I think the point in the long run is that skin color and what we think of socially as race is nothing but a not very good substitute for knowing about the actual genes that are helping the heart medication work. So I think the hope there in the long run is we'll just take race out of the equation. and we'll know about the genes that modify the effectiveness of the heart medication or whatever. But of course, the difference when you get to intelligence is that there aren't big genes out there to find, like at least potentially there are for heart disease. If there were, we would have found them by now.
Sarah in Huntington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, fine. How are you?
Okay.
I have not read Mr. Gladwell's piece yet, but I just spent the past 6 months traveling around Africa and spending a lot of that time in South Africa. And I came across a story, and I wish I could tell you where I, what publication I read it in, but essentially it was talking about a study where they had talked about the IQ differences between whites and blacks, and they had, in fact, found they were lower, but they seemed to attribute it to nutrition and environmental upbringing and abstract thinking, the things that are kind of cognitive skills that maybe don't develop so much. And that's only specific, you know, was specific to South Africa. But it does sort of beg the question, what, you know, what does intelligence mean when you're measuring IQ? Because it does seem to be these developmental kinds of skills.
Right, and whether you can really ever correct for physical conditions or
environmental situations.
Environmental situations or, you know, cultural context.
Exactly.
Like Malcolm Gladwell says, measuring modernity. Malcolm, do you want to comment on Sarah's observations from Africa?
I mean, I would agree with you. I mean, I think it's very important. I'm not one of those people. There are people who reject the notion of IQ outright, and I think that goes much too far. I think what we are measuring with IQ tests is something that is both real and profoundly important. The ability to think abstractly and think and be modern in the way you see the world is crucial to succeeding in the world. So it's not that we don't, or that I don't believe in IQ or its usefulness. I just don't think that whatever it's measuring is buried in our genes. I think it's a mixture of all kinds of different influences, and a lot of it has to do with the environment in which we are raised.
And beyond that, Malcolm, when we prize abstract thinking, do we lose something? Are there other kinds of intelligence that have gone out of vogue, so to speak?
Well, there are clearly other very, very useful traits for making it in the world that aren't connected to IQ. I think, you know, Howard Gardner obviously has made a career of bringing that fact to our
attention. From Harvard, his books about multiple intelligences.
Yeah, that kind of. I think that's all very true. But I do think, you know, look, I mean, is IQ one of the most useful measures we have of your ability to succeed in the world? Yeah, it probably is. One of a number, but it's very, very useful. But it's that's a separate question from where does your IQ come from?
Mm-hmm. And if I can add something to that,
Professor Turkheimer,
I mean, I think it is important when we talk about these things sort of as progressives that are suspicious of all of the racialization of this, that it's not like there isn't a profound and difficult problem to think about. I mean, it's simply a fact that black Americans score lower on IQ tests than white Americans, and what Malcolm says is correct, and those IQ test scores are, they're probably the best predictors of, say, how kids are going to do in school and the kind of success people are going to have in the world. And so that's not a trivial matter.
Right. So one of the questions that always comes up is, even if they found such a difference, why study it? Because there's nothing positive. There's only, you know, there are only things that are destructive that you could do with such information. So given the uncertainties that... Go ahead, Malcolm.
Well, see, this is where my real objection to hereditarians, or what I call IQ fundamentalists, is that their conclusion is always, because IQ differences between groups, ethnic groups, are genetic, there's nothing we can do, and we're wasting our time trying to bring, you know...
Trying to educate people.
Yes. And that's where I part ways with them. I think the reason this debate is important is that if you believe that at least in significant part the differences that exist between groups are environmental, it means you can do something about it. It means if you really want to put your mind to it, you can address some of the educational and social and cognitive deficits that people at the bottom end of the income and social scale in this country clearly suffer from. I mean, a high school in the middle of Detroit is not the same as a high school in Westchester County, nor is home life in the middle of, you know,
the same as home life in an upper middle, upper income family. Those are things we can do something about if we believe we can make a difference.
Professor,
and that's what this debate's about.
Professor Turkheimer, 30 seconds left on the same question about what constructive policies or anything else can come out of even discussing this.
Well, on the one hand, I think people would say if the scientific data take us someplace unpleasant, we have to go there anyway, and that's probably true. I just don't think the data can take us there. The other thing is that there's lots of new data that show that environments are especially important and genes less important for people who are raised in poverty.
Such as that Flynn study from Holland. If IQs went up 21 points over a generation in Holland, well, then we know at least
environmental.
We know at least that Heineken is good for you. So, Eric Turkheimer, professor of psychology at the University of Virginia, and Malcolm Gladwell, author and New Yorker writer, his article this week, None of the Above, What IQ Doesn't Tell You About Race. We've linked to it on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Thank you both very much for having a difficult discussion.
Sure, it's a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.